We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Abner Meres is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook, with Abner, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who've made him the boxer and the man he is. They chat about topics like the state of boxing, sports, music, culture, and family life. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Meres wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English out on Tuesday, episodes in Spanish out on Wednesday.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
There is more Nets news, Nets news, Nets news.
Yeah, this is a trend. You know, the Nets are popular now. We got the big stars. You know, we get negative headlines, positive headlines, whatever it might be. We're going to discuss it. As always, you can catch the buzz on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where are we starting today?
We're going to start off with Spencer Dinwiddie, Nick. Ooh. And he has parted ways with Raymond Brothers and the Roc Nation agency. Shams Charania was the one that reported it. Spencer Dinwiddie responded on Twitter with a little bit of a quote tweet. Utmost respect for Raymond Brothers, as he will continue to be my mentor. He did post a bit of a cryptic Instagram sort of thing, but maybe it was just, that's just his vibe. He's literally cryptocurrency king, and cryptic is just part of his aura. Via Brooklyn Nets 85, he posted like a bit of an icy sort of photo of him on his Instagram, and it said, "But when the world needed him most, he vanished. Hashtag avatar." Now, that could be just be random, cool, funny quotes or whatever, or it could be Spencer Dinwiddie. Now he's going to leave the Nets. Spencer Dinwiddie is gone, right, Nick?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, obviously, that's from Avatar: The Last Airbender. That's like the little theme song that starts before the show. So that's funny. But it was interesting, and I found it interesting. Not that he changed agents, because that's something you commonly see, but he's only been with Roc Nation for a year. I want to say he signed with them last September when, you know, Kyrie signed, or well, like along that whole aspect where a whole bunch of Nets players, it felt like we're signing with Roc Nation. And for him to leave, it could signal something, but it also could signal nothing. Because like you mentioned, you know, Spencer's a guy that's into tech, into cryptocurrency, kind of into doing things differently than other NBA players. We saw that whole thing where him allowing people to kind of bid on his contract, bid on where he's going to go next. So it's really hard to gauge if it means anything. And Spencer's also a guy that likes to play into things and likes to kind of, you know, play into the media, play into social media, have some fun with it. Like you said, stir the pot, get things cooking. So, you know, we'll just wait and see. It wouldn't completely surprise me if he were to be traded when the transaction window started, but I still find it unlikely that the Nets would be like that rash to make a move. Like, they're not going to dive into something unless it's something they feel really confident about.
No, and we'll obviously revisit about the 45 rumors that always come up for the Brooklyn Nets in this offseason again, because, you know, there's always little tidbits that we can discuss further. But on Spencer, Nick, I think that if anything, you could look at it from the other respect and sort of say, well, if he's representing himself, he doesn't have to give that agent 10, 20%, whatever it is of the contract, and he's getting, what, $20 million in his next contract. You know, that goes straight into his pocket rather than having to, and maybe he can take unders to stay at the Brooklyn Nets going forward or whatever other, you know, team he decides to go to. So for me, it's something that could be construed as a positive. And I did a little bit of like Twitter sort of sleuthing around and stuff, and you can, you know, confirm this with me because you're a much greater football fan than I am, an NFL fan than I am. Richard Sherman, did he do something similar for, he plays for the Seahawks or something?
He played for the Seahawks, now he plays for the Niners. He may have, I'm not 100% sure. It does sound like something Richard Sherman would do. Like Spencer Dinwiddie, extremely smart athlete, kind of doing things differently, willing to speak up about different topics and things along those lines. So it wouldn't surprise me. And other players have done it before. Somebody mentioned in my mentions on Twitter, Tobias Harris, I believe, does it. And also Ray Allen did it when he was in the league.
Okay, so yeah, it's not something totally out of your knee, but it certainly does fit Spencer Dinwiddie's persona. Yeah. And like I did put out there, he's going to be getting paid in Bitcoin, whatever the rate of that is, whenever he signs his new contract. So we'll certainly wait and see about that.
That is a really intriguing thing, and not to get off topic, but like if they paid him in Bitcoin, like maybe he'd be open more to that idea because Bitcoin is like drastically gone up in value. Like Bitcoin, I want to say, is like, don't quote me on this, but I want to say it's valued at almost $2,000 right now in terms of like the value still going up and up. So like that would be something that would interest Spencer Dinwiddie, but I'm not sure if it's legal with the CBA or if the Nets are into that as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's tried to do a couple of things that have sort of gone past the CBA in a lot of different ways. And Sean Marks is certainly a by-the-book guy, even though he does a lot of outlandish and crazy awesome things. The New Zealand wizard, the Kiwi wizard, as I like to call him. But Nick, I guess anything else to do, just a final sort of thought before we do move on to Kevin Durant. Are you looking into this as a point of Spencer is going to be staying, Spencer's going to be leaving, or is it sort of just, you know, news that is going to be overanalyzed, or is it something just like, oh, Spencer's spending too much time with Kyrie Irving, as was about the all 45 top comment mentions in Shams Charania's tweet?
No, I don't really look too much into it. I mean, like you kind of said, it fits Spencer Dinwiddie's vibe and like the persona he has. So I think it's not, I want to say expected, but it's something I'm not surprised by. And I mean, like at the end of the day, we all kind of know that Spencer probably wants to get a big payday. Like he took a pay cut to be with the Nets. That contract he signed was definitely in value of the Nets. So his next contract, he's surely going to be looking for some money.
Yeah, no doubt. It's probably going to be similar in the realms of what Joe Harris did. You know, we thought it was unders first up with that 2-year, $16 million deal. A lot of other people in the general media didn't, and now they have clear egg and everything else on their face, pie on their face. But Spencer Dinwiddie obviously is a much better player than $10 million per season. He is, again, the Nets have him, Karras, Joe. You know, there's basically every deal but DeAndre Jordan and Torian Prince on their roster right now. It's a below market value deal.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say this about Spencer too. Another reason I think that he's probably looking for a big payday in 2021 is because he has a lot of off the court aspirations, like in terms of investing in his own business and things like that. He's even said he wants to create his own Iron Man suit. So that's going to take some major funds. So I would lean towards that. Obviously, we'll discuss that later in the season and next year too.
Yeah, no doubt the Iron Man suit is going to be an emergency buzz podcast for sure.
Imagine in black and white, that'd be tough.
Oh, man, don't get me. I mean, I've got an Amazon gift card that I'm looking at some fun. I wonder how much an Iron Man suit costs. Probably a little bit more than some Brooklyn Nets shorts. We'll have to look at that. But Nick, probably. Maybe it's cheaper if I pay in Bitcoin. But we'll move on to Kevin Durant, Karis LeVert, and Kyrie Irving all working out at Kobe Bryant's facility in Los Angeles. Nick, does this basically every sort of shot, a lot of the shots of Kevin Durant shooting, we saw Karis sort of just being like, sort of like eyes wide open, you know, looking like, you know, does this make you, again, we're going to overanalyze it because we can, it makes you happy because it makes you feel like your boy Karis is going to be sticking around?
I think so. I think it gives you a little bit more confidence in that. You know, Karis has been working with KD for a while. We always reference 2016. Kevin Durant's going out of his way to kind of acknowledge the improvements that Karis has made, and even mentioning he's been surprised by how good he actually is as a player. So even if Karras isn't on the Nets, I look at this as a positive and just spending more time with one of the best offensive players in NBA history. You can't really look against that. And I think I want to say it was Matt Brooks who posted, it was like KD shooting the pull-up mid-range jumper, and then he posted a clip of Karras doing the same thing. You know, it makes sense. You know, just absorb what you can, because this is a guy that can teach you a ton of things, and it could drastically help Karras LeVert next year. You might not see it in the stat sheet, but it could help the Nets in terms of wins and losses.
Yeah, they do have not the same body type, but similar body types.
Yeah,
they're long and rangy. Obviously, Kevin Durant, Slim Reaper, and Karras. You know, we've obviously probably since this
baby KD.
Since this podcast inception, it's always been like, oh, wait till Karras puts on some muscle. Wait till Karras puts on some muscle. And it's like, yeah, he has put it on a little bit, but he's just generally gotten stronger.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant doesn't have to put on weight to be strong. Even some of those picks, though, you know, he's got the tank going. You know, those deltoids are looking nice. You know, maybe KD has been, because he can't actually work out his legs, he's been spending, you know, you've been getting back to the gym, I know, Nick. He's been spending a lot of time in his upper body a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I think KD's also a guy that you underestimate in terms of his strength because he's so lengthy. You know what I mean? Like, when you have arms that long, like, your muscles just aren't going to pop because it's literally like a foot-long bicep, maybe even longer. Like, so it's just not going to be as defined or as big because it's so long and lanky. So, I mean, overall, and it was good to see KD out there looking like his normal self, just beautiful on the court. And then the fact that Kyrie, KD, Karras, all in L.A., you get kind of positive vibes from that. So I don't know if any other Nets are there. Maybe they didn't make the picture, but it is positive for those three.
I know. I think you retweeted Spencer's been working out as well, yeah?
I believe with, so. Yeah.
With Montrezl Harrell and some other guys.
Christian Wood. I think
Jalen Hands was there as well.
Yeah.
So, the guys are getting in work. And Spencer had the shirt off as well. We've got a fit, good-looking team, Nick. I'll just put it that way. You know, not enough content for the OnlyFans just yet. That's just specifically for Joe Harris. But who knows?
Might have to turn into a full Nets one.
Yeah, well, let's maybe I'll widen the range. Maybe I'll get some more subscribers. We'll wait and see. I guess we'll obviously keep touching on that going forward. KD's seen obviously him working out. We're going to overanalyze that to the nth degree. Seeing Karras there is obviously a really positive sign, and Kyrie doing his thing too. But Nick Stanvan,
does it give you more confidence in Karras being on the team, Jack, or do you don't think it really matters?
Yeah, it does. I think that Brooklyn Nets 85 put out a really good sort of tweet. It's like, you know, all the things align with the fact that, you know, he's going to stay. You know, one of Kevin Durant's been working out with him for the past 3-4 years before he was even in Brooklyn. Sean Marks' first pick as a GM in the draft. A below-market deal. You know, we'll get
culture
a little
setter.
Culture setter. In a sense, you know what? I'll bring it up now, Nick. I put out a tweet around Jrue Holiday. This sort of leads into it a little bit with the Stan Van Gundy hiring. The poll I put out, you probably voted, was would you rather have next season these two, Karras and Jarrett or Jrue Holiday? What did you respond with?
I don't even know if I voted because I was so torn. I was like, I think I retweeted, but I was like, yo, I don't even know what I would pick. I think, like, you look at it and Jrue Holiday as like the fit, you understand why it makes so much sense, but it's so hard for you to be like, to trade away Karras and Jared Allen, because they're both guys that can get better. Like, and we saw them drastically improve in a short period from March to August. You know what I mean? Like, they both upped their game. The question is, how much better can they get? And the only thing I would say in that deal, I don't feel like the Nets, I feel like LeVert and Allen probably maybe have much more value in terms of a trade package, but in terms of fit, you make the argument Jrue Holiday kind of fits the team better. I don't think I'd pull the trigger on that trade in the offseason. That'd be something I'd wait to the trade deadline and be like, all right, our defense has to get better. We have to up this. Like, we need to make changes. That would be a trade I would make. I don't know if that's like the first trade I accept. I don't think I probably do in the offseason. I kind of wait for it. And it seems like with the Stan Van Gundy hiring, they're going to probably lean towards keeping Jrue.
Nice segue, my friend. You've been doing this podcast thing for a little while. You put it on Twitter. Does the Stan Van Gundy hiring make a Holiday trade more or less likely? One thing I will say before you jump in, Nick, is from the Pelican side of thing, you know, we obviously were a Nets podcast, so we purely analyze it from the Pelican side of things. Does Karras work alongside Ingram and Zion?
Yeah.
I don't 100% know or think so. If anything, Jrue Holiday is a better fit. David Griffin has also said, you know, he's the MVP. And, like, he didn't say it as, like, our team. He said it as, like, a general sort of statement. It was also said in relation to Woj, I think, put out a tweet saying about the defensive identity that they want to create with Stan Van Gundy and how he can do that. Pretty sure Drew Holiday's would be a big part of that, as being, you know, one of our favorite defenders in the league. Again, we've seen him in person. I'm never going to forget that night of just how damn good him and Anthony Davis were.
It was
were
a fun game, yeah.
Man, it's probably why it makes us higher on Drew Holiday, because we've seen him in person. But in saying that, if you were to respond to your own tweet, how would you have responded? What do you want? What do you think is likely? Looking at it from, I guess, the Pelican side of things, to provide, I guess, a bit more balanced view.
Yeah, I was honestly generally curious to see kind of what Pelican fans had to say. And they all leaned towards it being more likely they'd keep Drew because Stan Van Gundy wants to have that big defensive identity. And being an established coach, you think they're leaning more towards winning, because it's not like they're going to go into a rebuild. They didn't hire a Kenny Atkinson or one of these young coaches. They hired, you know, Stan Van Gundy, a guy who's been to the playoffs, been to the finals, and he's going to try to make them play defense and be more competent. I feel like he would like to have a veteran. Then I also am just like, I don't want to say scared to trade with David Griffin, but I feel like he's trying to hold more leverage than he actually has. Because Drew Holiday, again, is on an expiring deal, and you're going to have to pay him money after this deal. So it's just like, how much money are you willing to give, or how many assets are you willing to give up? How much are you willing to trade in first-round picks to get a guy? And then somebody commented on one of your tweets, Jack, and they brought up Drew Holiday's open three-point percentage, and it wasn't good. And it wasn't good. It was kind of similar to Caris LeVert. Obviously, Drew Holiday is a lot better in terms of defense, but offensively, there's probably an argument maybe Caris is at the same level or maybe a tad better, or could be next season.
I think he's a better shot creator. I think Drew is a better floor general. I just think he has a bit more experience and a bit more nous in that sort of sense.
And he's been more of a lead guard. You know what I mean? Yes. Caris wasn't really a lead guard until he came into the NBA, which is kind of unique. And then it's almost similar to Donovan Mitchell, who wasn't necessarily a lead guard, didn't have a ton of basketball experience. Then when he got into the NBA, they exposed him to these different roles, and it was something he kind of excel at. So it's just so much intrigue. And Caris LeVert's the topic we've talked about a lot, you know, given myself, given you, and just all the trade rumors and all the injuries. And it's just like, there's so much intrigue because you really don't know who he's going to be and what level he can hit. Because every time you kind of think he's capped out, he does something where you're like, oh shit, like maybe Caris can be a lot better. Like the 51 point game against Boston. I'm not going to lie, I love Caris more than probably almost anybody on Nets Twitter. I didn't think that was a possibility. I thought he was a really good player, but scoring 50 in a game against a good defense and not necessarily having the best supporting cast is something special. And then what we saw in the bubble and the passing and just kind of adapting to different roles, it just kind of excites you, and it makes you, I want to say, a little nervous if you're a Nets fan or Nets management to trade a guy who's been so good for your culture and has the possibility to keep ascending. And also be a little bit of a carryover when, you know, Kyrie and KD kind of age, and he can kind of take on a bigger load because he's the young gun. He's not super young. He's, I want to say, what was he, 25, 26 right now?
26.
Jack? Yeah, 26. So entering his prime, but still a good period when you have KD at 31, Kyrie at 28, 29. You know, you have this younger guy who can eat some of those minutes if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there, Nick, but I also do think that you have to be ruthless in the pursuit for a championship. And we've sort of seen some pretty ruthless moves. And the one that sort of springs to mind is the Isaiah Thomas sort of departure from Boston, and Danny Ainge not necessarily showing him not respect, because there's a clear amount of respect, but it didn't work for their team. They shipped him off for Kyrie Irving in
the end.
But that's
a trade that makes a lot of sense. You know what I mean? If it makes sense, you got to make the move.
Exactly. And I was discussing, you know, a little bit in the mentions as well. One thing that you sort of allude to a little bit is Drew Holiday's age and the Drew Holiday extension that would have to be offered to him. You know, I don't know if it's a Kawhi Leonard rental deal. And if you're doing that, you want him preseason, you want him gelling with the team right now, or not right now, whenever it is, whenever free
right
agency.
Now. Yeah. If it makes it, whenever the trade starts, you want whenever the guys.
Exactly. So if you were to do it at the deadline, you know, it's less time to sort of acquiesce each other with the teammates, and you're more likely to be like, okay, there's a premise of an offer for a deal for you here, and what does he want out of that? It would be his last deal that he can get, so he's going to try and maximize the amount of payment that he can get, and absolutely as he should. You know, is that 3 years, $90 million? Is that 4 years, $100 million? Not 100% sure, but he... based off what he has done, he deserves that. But how is he going to age? Because he's also had a lot of injury issues too.
Yeah.
You know, it's things that we haven't necessarily discussed about Jrue Holiday, so we wanted to try and bring a new slant to it. But there are negatives to trading for Jrue Holiday, and it seems like my mind changes quite consistently, and I'm by the next podcast, it could be, man, Jrue Holiday just took some sensu beans and was in the hyperbaric chamber, and now he's 110%. I don't know. But in saying that, there are plenty of negatives to both scenarios.
Yeah.
It's not a clean move one way or another. It's messy. Whether you're getting rid of Karras and you sort of, the fan base is livid like you, and I mean, I would be goddamn upset as well, because a lot of people have sort of said, and they made the comparison point with the Clippers, it's like, and the Lakers, you know, when a team is sort of on the come up, the who was there from the start makes it feel like more of a journey and makes the fans buy in more. Karras was there from the start. Jared Allen's been there from the start. Spencer's been there from the start. Joe Harris has been there from the start. If those guys aren't on the team anymore, but and all of those guys have been rumored in trades or signing trades or leaving the team, it's going to feel different, despite the fact that we love Kyrie, we love KD. Those are guys that we've podcasted about for 3 years. We have an emotional
investment. We've seen them grow up.
Exactly. Like the from Karis Levert being a young 22-year-old smashing Chipotle to a young 26-year-old having to not eat Chipotle because of food poisoning. Jared Allen's fro growing from day to day. Joe Harris's shaggy hair and shaggy beard and headband appearing and reappearing. You know, it's different. It's not like it's better or worse. It's just different. So that's just something to consider, as just like we are a fan podcast. You know, we're fans of the team, and that's where it sort of comes from and where it stems from. Is it going to be as satisfying if we win this championship next year? Not to say that we will. In fact, you know, to not get on a tangent, it generally does take a year to sort of for those superstar teams to gel. Clippers, Golden State, you know, a lot of Cleveland LeBron teams. It generally takes a year, and that's what somewhat worries me in terms of like,
the Lakers, though, got there pretty much in 1 year because a lot of their team was turnover.
Exactly. That's what the Nets have to hope for. Yeah. They have to hope for that level of chemistry to sort of take them into the season. And Kevin Durant and Kyrie and the collaboration hopefully take them going forward. But
that's why you could also make an argument to lean towards keeping players instead of making a big trade, because you want to keep the cohesion and the relationships and everybody happy. Where, like, if you trade somebody's, you know, favorite teammate, it might upset them or just kind of throw off the vibe a little bit. It's a really intriguing scenario. And that's why, like, I think the Nets have to be smart with this move and not, you know, go into the offseason being like, we need to add the third star. If Bradley Beal's there or one of these, you know, top 20, top 15 players, you pull the trigger on that because there's juggernaut dynasty type talk. But if it's Jrue Holiday, I'm not sure if you make the move for him, the Nets are like the favorite to win the chip next year. Like, he definitely helps and boosts them up, but I don't think it would instantly be like, all right, the Nets are the best team in the NBA type of thing. If they had Bradley Beal, that's a different conversation, because offensively, I'm not sure how you stop that squad.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. But another guy that we've sort of talked about and you've brought up on Twitter quite a few times is JJ Redick and his ties with a possible Brooklyn move. Now the Stan Van Gundy hiring, Brian Windhorst was saying on his podcast, I would be surprised if they trade JJ Redick. Redick was one of the drawing cards for Van Gundy there. He coached him in Orlando. Early in the process, I was told Griff came to JJ to sort of get a scouting report on Stan Van Gundy, and it was JJ's strong recommendation that helped continue to pursue him. I think JJ is going to end up being Stan's right-hand man on the roster. He is going to be 36 at the end of his contract. Seems to me that, you know, pairing two of the best sharpshooters in the league is very unlikely, Nick.
Yeah, it is highly unlikely, especially because, like I said, with Stan Van Gundy, he wants to have veterans. He wants to play good basketball. He wants to make the playoffs. He doesn't want to see some of the incompetence we saw from the Pelicans' defense in the bubble. Like, their defense at times was terrible. It was like college-level defense. So obviously having vets out there is going to make things a little bit better. And if JJ is tied to him, it's going to be hard to move him unless the Pelicans suck. Like, I don't think they're going to suck, but if they do suck, then the veterans all of a sudden get moved, and they get moved at a lesser price, especially if somebody who's 36.
That's the only likelihood that there's a buyout. I think I brought that up before. Yep. Or if, you know, JJ wants to, he said that, you know, he craves a championship. How likely is that in New Orleans? I don't think it's
very likely. I feel like he'll chip chase after this contract.
Yeah, he's got basically all the money that he can get. He'll probably take some vet minimum deals going forward, a la Kyle Korver, how he's with the Bucks now, whether he, you know, where he hops around to, I'm not 100% sure. It could be Brooklyn.
Nets. Yeah.
In 2022, 2023, who knows going forward. But It seems very unlikely at this point in time. But yeah, never rule anything out in the future.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving. That makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility of your hiring. You only pay for what you need and can pause your account at any time. And there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win the season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season-opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts.
But unfortunately, I guess, coaching news for all Nets is that Andy basically confirmed that he's going to be back in LA, sticking around with and looking forward to being on the bench again with Frank Vogel. Disappointing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little disappointing, but we kind of had a feeling this would be the case if the Lakers won a chip. Like, how are you leaving a championship team and you're working with LeBron James and Anthony Davis? It's not like he was coaching on, I don't know, just some bad team like the Sacramento Kings and wanted to leave. You know what I mean? It's like you're with the Lakers. You're in contention for a championship again next year. You love what you're doing. You're living in L.A. He's from L.A. So, like, it just was always going to be a hard sell for the Nets.
Yeah, the money would have been the sell, and you know, Josai has, you know, seemingly endless money in his large pockets, but you know, money isn't everything at the end of the day as well.
Yeah,
Phil Handy is one of the most coveted assistants in the league, and sometimes you're in a good living situation. You know, you're in LA, you're winning chips, you're with LeBron James. Doesn't really get much better than that. It's just about, you know, clearly
the Lakers are probably paying him well. Like,
no doubt, absolutely, but. I guess in relation to Mike D'Antoni, who we also brought up on the last episode, to you, Nick, now that basically, and we brought this up, and we can bring it up again because it is a point that is still relevant, all the coaching jobs are essentially set. D'Antoni is not going to be a head coach for the 2021 season unless OKC, in some really weird move, offer him a contract.
He ends up back up in Houston.
Oh, man,
I don't think that's going to happen either.
It's very unlikely. But does in saying that, does no news mean good news for the Brooklyn Nets in regards to Mike D'Antoni?
100%. I think he's a lot more likely to be an assistant coach now just because there's no opening. He's not going to be a head coach. Steve Nash and him have a great relationship, but I'm sure he has other great relationships in the league too with other head coaches. So it's going to come down to the matter of, you know, where do I want to be an assistant coach? Where do I think I'll carry the most value? Where do I want to be? You know, it does help the Nets play in a big market. They play in New York City. I believe D'Antoni enjoyed his time in New York City, given, you know, all the different, you know, pleasures you can have in New York. So it helps them. Steve Nash helps them getting to coach with Kyrie and KD, a guy that he has a relationship from the past. Like, hey, I wouldn't rule it out, and I feel more confident about it than I did a month ago.
Yeah, I feel more confident even about a week ago.
Yeah, you know? True.
And part of it
is the Pacer job.
Yeah, it was basically the Pacers and the Pelicans job. Yep. Those are the only ones where he would have had somewhat links to. And he obviously, it seemed to me, he had that Philly job in the bag, and then Doc Rivers got fired. It's just like, well, let's get Doc. And, you know, you can't, those are two of the best coaches of the past decade or so. So you can't really go wrong either way there. So it seems to me that, you know, you mentioned all the ties and links there. Obviously, Team USA links with KD and Kyrie. You know, the clear and strong relationship. You know, we said upon Steve Nash's hiring, I mentioned the quote from Mike D'Antoni saying, you know, he was basically coaching the team anyway. He yeah. said that about a guy who transformed his career as a coach. And, you know, the offense, I would be fascinated to see yeah. what sort of offensive systems would be in place with KD, Kyrie, the talent on paper, as well as the basketball minds
and IQ. Talk about collaboration.
Oh, man. You mentioned, you know, when we chatted about it, I guess, with Phil Handy, you know, it's money, it's living situation, it's opportunities, you know, going forward. And I've said before, you know, I've wanted Mike D'Antoni as a head coach. I thought he would have been a good enough head coach, not the best head coach. You know, Steve Nash is certainly not chump's change, but it seems to me that it's the most likely destination for him to end up as an assistant coach. You mentioned that there are definitely ties elsewhere. He's been a lifelong coach, but I honestly can't think of anywhere else where he would end up unless, you know, James Dolan is willing to offer him $20 million or something. I have no idea.
I don't even think that entices him. I think it's more enticing to work with players like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? And maybe having your fingerprints on possibly the best offense in the NBA next season. Like, that'd be more intriguing than, you know, I'm not even trying to be disrespectful to the Knicks. They're in a rebuild. They don't have a lot of good offensive players. They don't have a lot of good players. So it would be an uphill battle where coming to the Brooklyn just makes a lot more sense. I think he would definitely be an assistant on a really good team. Like, I don't see him going to a bad team and being assistant. And that helps the Nets because they're one of the best teams in the leagues probably next season, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, maybe not according to the power rankings going around everywhere, but that's not against quickly, Nick. It's not on my dock, but do you think? And it's been a topic brought up by The Jump and all other ESPN platforms, The Athletic or whatever. The Nets were basically ninth or tenth in a lot of those rankings, depending on where the rankings were. Too low, too high. What do you think?
I think 10's a little too low. Like, I'm not even just being a Nets fan here. I just think you go into a season with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, like, assuming that he's going to be retained. And, like, the one thing that I don't understand, and I'm not trying to hate on the team, but, like, why is Golden State getting so much respect for being a good team when they were the worst team in the league last year? Yeah, I know Steph and Klay missed the entire season. Klay's coming off a torn ACL. Steph broke his hand. They're a year older. Draymond looked pretty bad last season, and they essentially have no other good players in that team other than maybe Kevon Looney. And if Kevon Looney's your fourth best player, like, I think I'd rather have Kevon Looney than Andrew Wiggins. That's just my opinion.
Whoa!
Like, but you know what I mean? Like, why are we giving Golden State so much respect, but we don't want to give the Nets respect when they probably have a better overall roster? Yeah, you can make an argument Steph's the best player out of everybody I just mentioned because he's, you know, the healthiest probably. Season, but you still have to question Klay, and you still have to question Draymond, who in my opinion just looked really bad. He even looked bad in 2018 and 2017 with his offense. So, like, they're not magically going to solve everything, because even in the last time we saw them in the finals fully healthy without KD, they looked rough, and the roster really didn't change much. Obviously, they can make a trade, but they haven't made that trade yet. So how are you going to rank them above the Nets? Even I think they're ranked above Boston too, and I felt like Boston proved plenty this year, where I feel like the Nets are probably better than Boston, but I understand why them being higher. And then obviously Miami went to the finals, but I still feel like the Nets are probably a better team on paper, but I understand why they're not getting the respect because they haven't been on the court yet.
Yeah, the Golden State, to be somewhat objective about it, have championship pedigree. They've done it. They've proven
but so
it on the
KD and Kyrie.
But I think the questions surrounding their injury status, your two main superstars are overcoming. Kevin Durant's overcoming the worst injury you can as a basketball player. Kyrie Irving has said it before that, like, you know, and whether it was in jest, whether it was in passing or whatever, but, like, the shoulder thing is going to be a thing for his career. Now,
I mean, you could say the same thing about Steph's ankles, though.
Oh, you definitely could. No doubt about that. I just think that Steph has proven to be a bit more a bit healthier than Kyrie has. And again, I think for both of, you know, I think Golden State were like top five or whatever. I think the Nets can be the best team in the NBA. I'm not saying that at all, but I do. Out of the questions surrounding them, I think that's why you downgrade them. I think that I would have them anywhere from 6 to 9 in that range, 5 to 9. I honestly, you know, like you mentioned, the roster on paper is probably no better roster in the NBA right now, other than, you know, the Clippers if they're actually going to be good.
And there's an argument the Nets roster is, like, if you compare top, it all depends on KD and Kyrie, though.
Top seven, eight players, yeah.
Yeah, like, if you compare all those guys, like, there's a lot of talent on the Nets. I think at worst, I'd probably, like you said, Jack, I'd put them at 7 or 8. I think 10 is just a little too low. Like, you're telling me a team, like, as good as Kevin Durant is and the Achilles sucks and all that shit, but, like, this is a guy who is, like, godly skilled offensively because of the measurements he has. It's not like we're talking about explosion. It's been brought up by me. It's been brought up by a million NBA players that, like, you know, you can't even contest his shot.
Yeah, I put out a video of Kevin Durant, just a hype video that I sourced from YouTube. So check that out at the JMJBT. And it was guys like Kobe Bryant saying how, like, he is, I retired and I still couldn't figure out how to defend him. Like, yeah. I could, any guy in the NBA, I'm like, yep, got you, yep, got you, yep, got you. But then he was sort of saying how, like, you know, in a certain off seasons, he worked on his skill set and now he has both sides of his body. He can attack with both sides, yep. Both hands. And it's just like, if we now, obviously we don't know what he's going to be going forward, but again, something to consider. Where the Nets being disrespected is, it's nothing new. Let's put it that way. Cause
it's actually a good thing in my eyes.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, you would rather sort of have the, rather than be the media darlings like the Boston Celtics or whatever other teams where it's just like, man, Jason Tatum's going to be awesome and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, these guys are the best. I think that you want to have a bit of fuel to sort of go.
It almost can help create team unity.
Yeah, it definitely can. You know, you want to rally around that and, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers, I'm sure that there's, you know, the Lakers did it even though they fabricated it in a lot of ways. Like, apparently they're not respected. You know,
yeah, like they tried to say they're like underdogs going against like the Nuggets and the Heat. And it's just like, please stop. And LeBron, no one called you washed except Twitter trolls. Stop.
Yeah, even though Corey did think otherwise, thank God it's this podcast. we'll move forward, Nick, because there's plenty of other news to, for some reason, to actually get to. And this was a rumor that we brought up maybe a month or two ago about Wilson Chandler heading back to China to play for the CBA. And he has agreed to a deal with the Zhejiang Guangxia Lions. I hope I said that right.
Sounded good, man.
Yeah, again, let's not get Corey on this podcast to say that. But are you surprised at this, Nick? You know, because Wilson Chandler was a serviceable player for the Brooklyn Nets in the latter points of the season before he unfortunately, you know, he didn't get coronavirus, did he?
No, he opted out.
Yeah, so before he opted out of the bubble.
Yeah, I'm a tad surprised, but I think he's going to get a better paycheck in China than he would in the NBA. And like we've kind of referenced too, there's a high likelihood that he'll be done with his China season and be able to sign with an NBA team around that buyout market time. So he's kind of getting double paycheck and he'll still have an opportunity for a chip and it could even be back with the Nets. So not super surprising because he's a guy that's already played in China, I believe, like in the past, and he's cashed. So, and it's not like he's going to get a big contract. It was going to be a vet minimum for him in the offseason.
Yeah, and the money he would get in China as, you know, an A1 guy would be certainly more. I'm not 100% sure, but vet minimum.
It would at least be over $3 million at minimum.
Yeah, and vet minimum is like $2 million or so. So maximizing the money you get while your body still can, I'm all for. You know, if I was an NBA player, I would milk it for as long as I could and go to different countries to sort of just get that money until my body could do no more. So shout out to Wilson Chandler. He's always going to be a great Brooklyn Net. And we could see him, like you said, going forward.
But I enjoyed him on the Nets. Like, I really did. And he didn't play a ton, but I don't know. I've always kind of liked Wilson Chandler, even from his time with the Knicks to the Denver Nuggets to it kind of sucked what happened with Philadelphia. He just really didn't work out. His body kind of gave up to him. And that's kind of hurt his career. So,
yeah, I thought that he had some really good defensive moments. He had some timely threes for the team. You know, he
was big in that Laker game that the Nets won over them.
Yeah, LeBron stopper. And maybe if the Miami Heat had Wilson Chandler, they might have won the championship. Who knows? Nick, a good point was brought up by our friend, John Hollinger of The Athletic. We'll get to some more news from Mr. Johnny Boy later on in the pod. But he brought up the fact that TLC's rise could jeopardize Garrett Temple's future with the Brooklyn Nets. Now, you've probably sort of read into this and such, but for those that haven't, Garrett Temple obviously has a team option next season for around $4.5-5 million. Now, the Nets are obviously going to be into the tax. That is known. You know, they wanted to retain Joe Harris. I think every single person who is a Nets fan has tweeted about it every hour of the day, and I love it. I retweet all of them, if not most of them. In saying that, retaining Joe Harris, retaining Garrett Temple is going to make you pay even more into the luxury tax. It's a lot of money. Not saying that Josai won't, and not saying that Josai can't, but you know, it's something that was brought up in the fact that TLC might be a more valuable player right now in terms of what he showed in the bubble. Really good three-point shooting, solid enough defense, but what TLC doesn't have, and I guess you'll probably agree with me with this, Nick, Garrett Temple's a leader. And a great teammate. And I think that that is the value he provides.
And basketball IQ is substantially higher than TLC. No disrespect, but Temple's a very smart basketball player.
You need things beyond the on-court product to win a championship, to win the Larry O.B. And Garrett Temple is a guy that, you know, is Jared Dudley. He's just a piece that you need for whatever minutes, whatever role on and off the court to get there. And I guess you this up in terms of trading the first round pick to sort of, whether it's for a future first round in a year or two in the future where you have to deal with it, whether it's packaging toy and prints or whatever to save some money. A lot of people have given different sort of scenarios in relation to that. How important do you think Garrett Temple is? And I guess, what would you do if you're Sean Marks' shoes?
Yeah, I think this is a situation where Sean Marks has a better vibe for it than we do, because he'd have an idea of, hey, maybe there's another free agent I can sign at a vet minimum, a la Jared Dudley or somebody, to come in and be that locker room guy and be that leader that we need. Because Temple's role is important, like you said, Jack, and it's not necessarily on the court, it's off the court. We know he's a guy that Kyrie Irving wanted here. He's a guy that a lot of the young players have talked about helping them in terms of on and off the court. So he's a person that, you know, everyone respects necessarily on the Nets team and probably the organization. It's a really tough situation for them. I mean, ideally, you'd love to decline his team option and sign him to a vet minimum deal. But as like as Garrett Temple or just anybody, you'd kind of be like, yo, kind of like a F you. Like, bro, you just took away my money and now you want to bring me back. Like, that's mad disrespectful. So it's a tough situation for the Nets. I think TLC and him in terms of on the court are pretty similar, but I think even like Garrett Temple, just with his IQ, kind of helps the Nets maybe a little bit more in terms of like a championship situation. But I wouldn't be completely surprised if they turn down his team option just to save some money, because they're going to be paying a lot in the luxury tax with re-signing Joe Harris, and which we think is a lock right now.
It should be, no doubt about that. In saying that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what Josai is willing to do, because Sean Marks, no doubt, and the team is going to want Garrett Temple next season.
Spend that money.
But his $4, $5 million contract on the books will cost 7, 8, 10, 15, depending on how deep the Nets do get into the tax. And, you know, I think it's likely that the 19th pick is shipped off. I think that Toy and Prince's future is murky. And you get off those two assets right there for either cheaper assets or whatever else it might be, and prioritizing Garrett Temple as a locker room piece, a leader. You know, he had a good season as well. He didn't have an amazing season, but he was valuable and contributed to this Brooklyn Nets team. And
he'll be a lot better as a ninth or tenth man.
Yeah, no doubt. He was good in the bubble as well. You know, if you're looking at guys coming off the bench, you know, going forward, and guys that are in the locker room that are in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant's ear, you know, Jared Dudley would hold guys accountable in film rooms and stuff. You know, that seems to me like a guy, and you know, you mentioned Jared Dudley. I just think Garrett Temple still has something left in the tank to produce on the court and to provide leadership on the court, which I think is way more valuable, infinitely more valuable.
Yeah, I mean, the Jamal Crawford aspect is something to think about too, if they think that's a guy that could maybe fill the leadership role. You know what I mean? He can't produce on the court the same way Temple can, but the Nets might not need that if they have, you know, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and DeAndre all leading in the right way. Not saying that's the perfect leadership group or anything like that, but you have to make compromises somewhere. And if you're Sean Marks and you're talking to Josai and you're like, hey, we need to give Joe Harris an extra $1 million so we can, you know, outbid the Atlanta Hawks or the New York Knicks, and that means we have to let go of Garrett Temple, you do it every day of the week.
I think the most fascinating thing about that, Nick, with the Joe Harris deal is Sean Marks has weaponized restricted free agency for himself and the team before. are other teams going to throw it in his face?
You know? Yeah, he's not a restricted free agent, though, so they can still throw it back in his face, though.
Yeah, in terms of, like, you know, unrestricted free agent, do hold his bird rights, all those different things. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to sort of see what other GMs, and I think that at least on the optics-wise, it seems like Sean Marks has a good relationship with a lot of different GMs, and the teams that are going to be willing to throw money at Joe Harris will probably be, you know, Atlanta, Detroit, and probably plenty of other teams. Mid-level exception, apparently, from the Milwaukee Bucks. God.
The teams that he doesn't have a good relationship would be the Miami Heat, the Portland Trailblazers, and the Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
Miami would be the only team out of those three that I believe has cap space going into the offseason. I'm not necessarily sure they'll be targeting Joe Harris because of Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. Wouldn't rule it completely out, but it seems kind of unlikely given that they're trying to save that money for 2021.
Yeah, they can keep that Jimmy Neutron Sheen looking big bag. We'll keep that Joe Harris with his sexy, gorgeous locks. I guess it's going to be fascinating. Sean Marks is going to have he's going to be putting in work, and he's probably already putting in work in the text. He's probably keeping up with Joe's side in terms of just like scenario A. We heard about plan A, B, C, and D in last year's offseason.
Yeah.
Man, he's going to have to need E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, I, C, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z for this offseason.
He might need another language.
Oh, man, he's going to have to go into Mandarin. I think Joe's side speaks Mandarin. It's going to be probably the most intriguing offseason we've ever seen as Brooklyn Nets fans. And when you are in championship status and when you have to do some finagling, you know, Sean Marks is incredibly smart as well in terms of the ability to land Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant in the first place required finagling around and going, all right.
Considering the situation he started with, too.
Exactly. So if anyone can do it, it's the Wizard Sean. But, Nick, we alluded to The Athletic a little bit. They had some rankings of some Nets players in their top 125. Jared Allen was in Tier 5, around that 80 to 125. Joe Harris was in Tier 4B with guys like J.J. Redick. Also in 4B was Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie, offensive lead guards. Also in Tier 3B, which is all-star status, is Kyrie Irving, around that 25 to 30 range. And Tier 4 is just below or fringe all-star, and Tier 5 is solid starter level. Disrespect, Nick, what are your thoughts on this? Like, I guess, objectively speaking, just subjectively, because ranking is subjective. Rank a guy like Jared Allen, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Kyrie Irving off the top of your head, because I need some help. The top 50 is going to be hard for OTG basketball.
Yeah, I'll definitely be helping you guys with that. But I was actually kind of maybe a little surprised Jared Allen was in Tier 5, kind of. But then I guess because it's such a wide range of 80 to 125. Like, if he's the 80th best player in that tier, that kind of makes sense. And Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, and Spencer Dinwiddie all between 60 and 79. I'd hear an argument for Spencer and Caris being boosted. I think Joe's probably in the right range. You can make an argument to boost them up a little bit, but it's like they're all around that same level, and I feel like people don't really know what to say about them until next season where they see them in more realistic playoff situations where they're actually in an advantage or on an even playing field. Because obviously against the Raptors, can't take a ton from Joe and Caris because, you know, they were so outmatched in terms of talent. But I would think that Caris, and I see the little blurb here. I wasn't able, obviously, I don't have a subscription to The Athletic, so I wasn't able to read it all. But he mentions the metrics not backing up Caris. And I think this is a case a lot because of the peaks and the lows we see with Caris because of the injuries. So, like, peak level Caris, I think, is easily a top 50 player. But he's not necessarily at peak all the time because, all right, he's had an injury, and then he's coming back, and then he's a month, and then he's off the bench, and his minutes are all over the place. And I'd say the same thing with Spencer because his role fluctuates so much. At times during the year, he definitely felt like a top 50 player. He made your guys' list last year, didn't he? Or was he right on the cut?
He did.
So I feel like, you know, those guys could probably get a slight bump, but I'm not going to be too upset if he has them at like 62, 63, and we think that they're, you know, 42 and 43. Like you said, it's so subjective. I will say the Kyrie Irving one, though, I felt like was more disrespectful. 25 to 30, like, he's a better player than that. I know he wasn't healthy and he only played 20 games, but in those 20 games, he was one of the best offensive players in the NBA. He put up two freaking 50-point games in 20 games. Like, that's literally extremely impressive. And in one of them being one of the most efficient 50-point games in NBA history, I think he at least has to be in tier 3A, maybe? What would that be?
Yeah.
20 to 15 or something like that? I think he has to at least be in, like, the 15 to 20 range. Like, 25 to 30 for Kyrie Irving just kind of seems a little ludicrous.
It is. I will say Joe Harris should be in tier one. He's in tier one in my heart, my head, and in all of my thoughts. Jared Allen, I believe, is also, you know, starting caliber player, and I think will grow to be maybe a tier sort of four player. You know, he's an above average starter to me. And I think that he can be. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie has said that he can be a top five center in the league. He certainly has the talent there. On Karras and I think that they're bona fide top 50 players. Bona fide. Like, there is without a question that they're top 50 players. And for me, that is a range. You know, 60 to 79 feels a little bit disrespectful based off
but what... But the tier seems so weird. That's what throws me off, is tier four is just below our fringe all-stars. Like, how do you have... And I like Seth Part now. 60 to 79 is fringe all-stars when there's only what, Jack? There's 30 all-stars?
20, yeah, 20... Well, 25, I think. Something around
okay,
that.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, I guess it's a wider range because I agree. They are fringe all-stars. And for me, you know, Karis LeVert has the talent. Like you said, you know, health is a big thing for him. Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, I think Charles Barkley had him as an all-star last year.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
Charles had him as an all-star 2 years.
Yeah.
The year D'Lo made it, he had Spencer. Then Spencer probably would have been an all-star if he didn't break his hand that year. That's no disrespect to D'Angelo Russell. I think Dinwiddie was, you know, better at points, but D'Lo was just healthier the entire season.
Yeah, not to say that Charles Barkley is a guy we're going to be using going forward. But, yeah, I would say ceiling, Karis LeVert, you know, mid to late 20s. I think his ceiling is a little bit lower for Spencer Dinwiddie, probably late 30s, if not early 40s. And ceiling for Kyrie Irving is, I think, in one of the first iterations of the top 50, top 10, I think I had him. I think I might have had him 8th or 9th. I can't totally remember off the top of my head. I get why there is shade thrown at him, and we'll get to a little bit more of it soon. But if you're looking, like you just said, Nick, purely on when he is out there, it's rare that he is not efficient or he is not producing.
And you know, it's rare that he's not one of the best players on the court, if not the best. You know what I mean? A lot of the time when he plays.
The one game that sticks out to me is the Philadelphia game, and that was the one where he came out and spoke about these guys, we need these guys or whatever. And that, to me, is the one thing that I like, probably the one blemish on this season, Kyrie Irving. Everything else he's done off the court more than makes up for it. So for me, and obviously Kevin Durant is probably going to be in the next tier or tier above. He's a Hall of Fame player. He can be the best player in the league. You know, he was the best player in the league before he was injured. Simple as that. Like, we don't have to... No shade at LeBron. We're both massive LeBron James fans here. You know, I picked the Lakers to win the championship because of LeBron James.
Yep.
But
here,
Kevin Durant was the best player in 2018.
Yep.
And it was till the Achilles injury did and the calf injuries sort of started to hinder him a little bit. So that's the ceiling for Kevin Durant. Will he get back there? I don't know. But I think his floor at worst is 15. And it's going to be fascinating, like, when me, you, and Corey get together. It's just like, how are we going to rank these guys? And maybe we do, maybe we don't, maybe we lead them off the list. But yeah, I think the tiers are okay. I just think that the number of the rankings is a bit like you said, a bit askew.
Yeah, just like, it doesn't add up, especially for like someone who's so statistically based, you know what I mean? And having such a wide range, and like looking at tier two and tier three is all-star, and that's where they put Kyrie Irving, and tier two is all NBA or Hall of Fame candidate. If I'm not mistaken, like every year Kyrie's been healthy, like since he's been an established player, he's been all NBA. Like if he's healthy, like he would have made all NBA this year. The fact is he wasn't healthy. And like that game against Philadelphia, which you brought up, was like when he was dealing with a shoulder injury, that like first stretch before the shoulder injury, like he was ridiculous.
Yeah. All NBA second team in 2019, all NBA third team in 2015. So two-time all NBA player for you there, Nick. And, you know, all NBA second team, you know, I think his season in Boston was a little bit underrated. He's obviously, he flamed out a little bit in the playoffs, but his regular season there was awesome. He was super, super, super. So if we can get a version of that and a better version of him in the playoffs, then the Nets are going to be doing some nasty things come the postseason. Nick, some shade was thrown at our guy, Kyrie Irving, the third eye god himself. I'll give you two quotes here from The Athletic. One from an agent. This is the one that stuck out to me, so I screenshotted it, aggregated it. Sorry to all the Nets aggregators out there, and I put it out there. And this was in response to the Nets being a championship sort of contention. No, no, hell no. You're banking on the highest level of volatility. It's an impossibility. Kevin Durant is probably the best player in the NBA. But Kyrie Irving is a total loose cannon, and he's not doing anything to show us anything but that right now. That's going to be difficult. I hate to comment on people I don't really know, but Kyrie is entering his Stephon Marbury phase. You can see it. It's there. Basketball is not a priority for him. Okay, before you go, Nick, I hate to comment on people I don't really know. Look, no offense, and then you offend the person. Like,
to the highest extent, too. It's not even like a little shade. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't think he cares about basketball, but he's one of the best point guards in the NBA. He just is randomly that skilled. It's
weird, man.
I didn't like that. I didn't like the Stephon Marbury comparison because they're nothing alike. Like, they're just not. And you want to push, and their games aren't alike. Stephon Marbury was never to the level of player that Kyrie Irving is. Yeah, he was a great point guard in the NBA. He put up stats, but he never won anything close to the level in which Kyrie has won. And he's proven that winning a championship, not only with the Cavs, but also with Team USA. You know what I mean? He was a big part of that team as well, got this relationship with Kevin Durant there. So it's just like saying these things just doesn't make sense. And like, You ignore the fact the rest of the Nets roster, too, I think is kind of annoying, where you're like, oh, well, if Kyrie Irving's not the best possible player, like, I'm not even 100% sure. It also depends on, like, how the rest of the roster break down and how good Kevin Durant is. But if Kyrie Irving were to miss 30 games next year and be okay for the playoffs, I don't think that would really matter for the Nets, long as he's healthy for the postseason. Even if he played 40 games next year, I think it would be fine long as he's healthy for the postseason, because they have enough talent on the roster to win enough games to probably be a top four seed, maybe a five seed at worst.
Yeah, it's going to be about the timing of those injuries. That's going to matter most. And
if KD's good, then like, I'm not even like saying Kyrie doesn't matter, but he doesn't matter to the same extent. You know what I mean? If he's anything close to what we saw last time he took the court, putting Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert next to Kevin Durant might be good enough to beat teams in a playoff series. That's how good Kevin Durant is when healthy. Yep. And obviously, we have no idea if he's going to be that guy, but just the possibility of that is super exciting as Nets fans.
Yeah, we saw LeBron James take over the East with freaking J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. And, you know, and obviously the East is getting stronger with guys like, you know, Jason Tatum on the rise. Jimmy Butler was awesome. But, you know, they are not
an impressive year for the East, though. Like,
yeah, exactly. They're not in the stratosphere of Kevin Durant when he is at his best. But again, that's the key, when he is at his best, if he is at his best. The big key is the if, I guess. Another quote, Nick, I'll throw at you. And you can tell me which one is more disrespectful, I guess. This is from our boy Johnny H, John Hollinger. The Nets have Kevin Durant recovering from Achilles injury, Kyrie Irving recovering from shoulder injury, and 15 other players recovering from spending a year with Kyrie Irving. Ha 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 ha. What's more disrespectful to you, mate?
I think the Stephon Marbury one, because I think John Hollinger is clearly trying to make a joke and be funny, even though the joke's not really that funny. But the Stephon Marbury and saying that Kyrie doesn't care about basketball and like his volatility is going to be the reason the Nets don't win and he has no hope in them winning a championship, like that's just like shitting on the team and disrespecting them, where John Hollinger is just trying to take a shot at, you know, Kyrie being a little, I guess, crazy, if that makes sense. I don't think he's crazy, but that's what John Hollinger's trying to say.
Yeah, like, let's just ease up a little bit. Like, I think I said on the last
podcast, honestly, John Hollinger seems like an annoying person that I wouldn't want to spend a whole year with, so I
can... Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to get back into the NBA game, my guy, now don't shit on dudes who are in the NBA. You know, you're clearly an intelligent enough guy. You're creating all these statistics, blah, blah, blah. Good for you, mate. Memphis didn't go so well, I guess, at the end of the day. So, I guess, you know, to me, it just seemed a little bit immature and childish. You know, it's something you would hear on a podcast, not necessarily, and I think it has less gravity in a podcast, if anything, because you're talking shit with your mate or whatever it is. He's talking shit with whichever NBA nerd is on his podcast. Whereas, you have it in writing, it's just there, and you can interpret it however you want.
Yeah,
you can't, you know, the tone of us sort of saying and making jokes about whoever else on this podcast, when you hear it, it's just like, ah, clearly Nick's joking there, Jack's joking there. But you see it on paper, it's just like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Like,
and
really?
And he's kind of snarky in general. Like, for example, like, Jack, if you're saying, like, if Zach Harper said this on a podcast, I would just laugh about it because that's, like, Zach Harper's vibe. Where John Hollinger, when he says things like this, he's kind of being more snarky than funny, and that's not, like, why I'm going to listen or read John Hollinger content. I'm not looking for your jokes. I'm looking for your statistical or analysis.
Yeah, I mean, no one comes to me for things outside of the Nets or, you know, objective analysis about Joe Harris. I'm going to give them the most subjective analysis that you're ever going to get. That's why For some reason, people follow me on Twitter or listen to this podcast because I say stupid, outlandish things. And you know, but again, I'm just not necessarily a fan of shitting on guys. And I think maybe not to get all existential about it, but as we've gotten older, Nick, you know, we're both in our, I'm almost turning 30 in a couple of weeks. You're married now. You're settling down in life a little bit. It just seems to me that's just like, Let's throw a bit of love. And maybe I'm learning a bit of it from Kyrie Irving's live Instagrams and stuff. It's just, you know, it's all love. We don't have to bring people down about this sort of thing. And, you know, make the funny jokes when they are relevant. Do it on a podcast with, like you mentioned, Zach Harper or other sort of guys who have banter. You know, there's a difference between, like, you know, putting it in banter terms and other sort of terms. And to me, I'm not going to be kept awake at night, but again, I guess we're putting it on a podcast and speaking about it for 5 minutes. So I guess it's the pot calling the kettle black a little bit.
It definitely rubbed us the wrong way. You know what I mean? I don't think it's like a terrible statement. It's not the end of the world, but it's just like, oh, you're just jumping on the Kyrie hate bandwagon and like trying to question his mental health and like who he is as a person. When John Hollinger, I'm pretty confident you don't know Kyrie Irving personally. So like, please don't comment on it unless you were in the Nets front office or have dealt with him. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, it's just something that I think we just need to lessen on the hate of whether it's Kyrie or KD, like, it just seems irrational and over the top. And now that there's no basketball to be played, it seems like it's gone to another level. It's just like, well, Twitterati's going to come out. The guys on Instagram are going to come out. I need on the next podcast, by the next podcast, Kevin Durant to jump in someone's mentions and defend Kyrie, defend himself, defend the Nets. So then we got some content to talk about in relation to that terms, because it's more relevant when he's standing up for his guy than, you know, a bloke down in Australia.
It'd be funny if he did like a whole podcast episode of just responding to tweets, like talking bad about him and Kyrie and the Nets.
Definitely. I would subscribe to that a million times over. Nick, we chatted a little bit about Wilson Chandler earlier in the pod, and on Reddit, there were some users talking about Jeff Green as a replacement. I know Nets Twitter in general have spoken about him as being a target, as a vet minimum guy. I think there are ties to Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving. I can't remember who exactly.
He played, I want to say, his early in his career with OKC. He probably played with KD.
Oh, Seattle, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
He would have the ties with Kevin Durant there. And obviously with Houston, who knows what's going on.
And he may have been on a Cavs team with Kyrie, but I kind of feel like Jeff Green signed after Kyrie left, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah, I think that might be true as well. The timeline, I remember putting out a tweet.
He's been on a lot of teams.
8 or 9 teams in the end. But what are your thoughts, I guess? We'll probably dive into roster construction, vet minimum guys. We could do specials on vet minimum guys. But I guess one guy to bring up to you now, Jeff Green replacing, I guess, Wilson Chandler, and a guy who can sort of fill out the roster. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he'd be a nice fit. You know, you can do a lot worse at vet minimum. I think Jeff Green's a guy that's probably chasing chips at this point in his career, and he just kind of he has a lot of versatility. You know, you saw in Houston they had him playing center. He can play power forward. Probably not going to play a ton of small forward this point in his career, but still gives you a good body, gives you somebody you can throw out in one of those combo forward lineups. So I don't mind Jeff Green. I've always kind of liked his game. He's just been, you know, had somewhat of a disappointing career because there was always so hope for him to be an all-star level player, but he never necessarily put it all together.
Yeah, he was decent. He showed some nice moments for the Houston Rockets in the playoffs. He was
maybe their X factor, really.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some articles at OGBasketball.com and some episodes of The Outlet, you guys were discussing that. And, you know, he played some small ball five for them. I don't necessarily know whether that's viable, you know, for the Nets next season when you've got, you know, two centers already on the roster. But
yeah,
as a vet minimum guy, you know, he would be near the top of the list. We obviously haven't delved deep into our research of guys who can fill that role, but you could certainly do a lot worse than Jeff Green in terms of, you know, can shoot the three ball okay. Obviously, he would have got a lot more experience doing that in Houston. You know, still a decent enough athlete, hasn't totally lost.
He'll give you like one poster dunk like every 10 games, and you'll be like, yo, this guy still has this much juice. Like, he'll throw down dunks, and I'm just like, holy shit, Jeff Green. Like, why can't you do this normally?
Yeah, exactly. Nick, I wanted to finish with a bit of an unsavory topic. Kyrie Irving posted on his Instagram the other day, a Native American with the caption Sitting Bull. And to say that there were unsavory responses in response to that post would be an understatement. We've talked about, I guess, the sort of trivial comments from guys like John Hollinger and these agents and stuff. Look, that's, I guess, water off a duck's back in relation to this sort of racist fucking garbage that people on social media think they have the right to talk about. And throwing racist terms, racist comments, any form of racism, objectification, I'm a bit flustered talking about this topic, Nick, because it's something that really infuriates me in terms of, we know how important Kyrie's heritage is to him. It's a massive reason why he has struggled at points of his career, mentally and physically. And for him to just want to express himself in whatever way, everyone should have the freedom of expression, no matter who you are, where you're from, what your heritage is, what your family line is. Everyone should have that right, no matter what. Social media, unfortunately, gives racist dickheads a platform to go, fuck this, fuck that, N-word this, all these different sort of comments. And I apologize for swearing, but I think given the gravity of this topic and the seriousness of it, sometimes profanities are okay on a public platform. And when talking about this, and I don't want to give these racists a platform, so I'm not going to say any of the comments, because it's Kyrie Irving that deserves the platform to express himself. That's why I mentioned his post and his caption. But just everyone else who feels like the need to make a comment, just shut your goddamn mouth. Simple as that. Just zip it up. When you got nothing nice to say, don't say it at all. And that's obviously a broad statement. You can obviously have a bit of banter or whatever, but keep his name out of your mouth if you're going
to keep it classy. If you're going to talk shit, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to say something bad about somebody or be like, you know, oh, I don't think Kyrie, he's overrated or something like that, whatever, that's fine. Don't say racist things. Don't talk bad about someone's heritage. Don't, you know what I mean? Like you said, Jack, the day and age we live in with social media allows people to be essentially fake or like talk as much shit as they want and not get reprimanded, because they can hide behind a Avi or a logo or whatever they want to, you know, hide, and no one really knows who they are. It's not going to impact their personal life until, you know, Twitter cancels them or something like that. But it is pretty disgusting, given that he didn't even tweet anything or post anything offensive on Instagram. He posted a picture of a Native American Sitting Bull, which I believe has some historical reference. I'm not crazy on American or Native American history, but I'm sure it's not anything offensive, and these people just kind of attacked him. Like, if I wanted to post something about being Italian, would people post racist things? Probably not. So, like, leave him alone, let him post what he wants to post. And like you said, Jack, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all, because it's just kind of, it's so crazy that people hate their lives so much that they go out of their way to try to make other people unhappy and say negative things about them. Like, I could never envision myself going to a post and not liking an athlete and commenting. I would just scroll past them or just not think about them, or maybe, and I would never go and say anything offensive, like racially or anything that's like crossing the line. Like, if I was going to say anything, like, for example, if I was talking bad about a player I don't like, let's say like Kyle Lowry is annoying the shit out of me tonight because he's flopping. Like, that's as far as I'd really go. You know what I mean? Or just say he's a flopper. Like, there's ways to criticize or joke around or banter or whatever you want to say about athletes and stuff like that. But the way that people act sometimes is just disgusting. Like, there's not a better word for it, because it's like, as a human, why are you going out of your way to attack somebody that essentially has no impact on your life on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, there has to be something deeply wrong in your heart and soul if that is how you choose to respond to something like this. And, you know, again, I've been, like you sort of mentioned about Kyle Lowry, I've been guilty of that. I've called him like a fat ass or whatever, like bum or whatever. But to me, you know, I'm not attacking him for something that is a part of his identity. You know, maybe it's something I need to look at myself and go, all right, is that crossing a line or whatever? And if I get called, there have been times where I've talked about things, I've gotten called out for them. I've been like, look, I don't know. You know more than me. I'll shut the fuck up. And sometimes people need to be told that and to have to be educated in that sort of way. And these people are beyond education. One thing I will say as a comparison point, there have been death threats that have been thrown at Australian footballers throughout this AFL season, and threats to kill family members and that sort of thing.
We saw Danny Green freaking get them in the finals.
police have got involved down here, and people who have made those comments have actually been charged. Good. So it is a good thing that's happening down here. It needs to happen everywhere else, because some of this bullshit is just like, the person or who figures this out deserves $1 trillion, because no one, no matter who you are, no matter, I mean, it just deserves to get any level of hate for just whatever they choose to be and whoever the person. Now, there are obviously exceptions to that rule, but yeah, when you are posting things like your family heritage and things that are important to you, part of your identity, you know, it's just, there's a darkness in people's souls that just, it's bewildering. It really is bewildering.
Yeah, it's just really disappointing, like you said, Jack. I think, you know, you have to do something about it, reprimand them in some way, because this is something that, like, these people just grow up and be terrible humans. You know, because a lot of them are teenagers or kids that don't understand and don't really ever learn, and they never have to deal with it. And they're the same people you see on the news, you know, spewing racist things and being arrested or, you know, sent to jail or having to deal with these aspects. So obviously we could talk about this topic for, you know, another hour. But Jack, anything else you want to touch on today?
No, Nick, but somehow I don't get how we get an hour or however long we've been spending talking about random topics. And we've still got trade episodes that are going to be dropping in the coming days as well. So make sure you subscribe and stay tuned.
Yeah, subscribe, rate, and review. Everything is appreciated. And if you ever want us to, you know, catch on a topic on an episode, hit us up on Twitter at @TheJManJBT, at @OTGNick. You know, let us know. And as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.